good morning. It's a Friday morning, August the 24th, 2018. You are tuned into a new program here on WWGH Radio, Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker, who you hear every Tuesday here on the station, 5:10 to 6 p.m. live with the Pastor Spot, which also replays on Wednesdays, 3:10 to 4 p.m. and on Sunday mornings from 8:10 to 9 a.m. Now, the program you're hearing now live on Friday morning will repeat on Saturday morning, 9:10 to 10 a.m., and then on Tuesdays from 6:10 to 7 p.m. And it's going to be a loose, freewheeling conversation of what's going on in the week, in the world. So I will turn it over here to the host, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, but Scott, we're kind of co-hosting this, aren't we?
We're going to co-host this thing.
Yes, we are. That ought to be a good time, really should. I'm really looking forward to this. One of the things that I thought about when we talked about this show was kind of letting people around the area know about things that are going on, and not just news issues or community issues, but happenings, things that are going on, things they can attend, do with their family, save a buck maybe doing a few things, some things like that. But just something so they, I always promote on the other show, Pastor Spot, I always promote families doing things together. So if we can help in that area and get them to do things together that won't cost an arm and a leg or have a good time or whatever. And maybe we'll even on the show have, down the road, have some giveaways to some of the things that will cost money, get some tickets, whatnot, and do some of those things. It'd be fun.
Absolutely. And September is a big month for this. I think really this is the last free weekend before we go into the Popcorn Festival, and then they have the big fly-in out at the Municipal Airport. So there's a couple weekends there in the beginning of September where it's free to get in. I mean, if you want to buy food, that's going to cost you some money. But if you eat before you come, those events are free to enter. And the entertainment at the Popcorn Festival is free to attend. So it's a good couple weeks. Family events.
Yes, it is. It is. And I encourage you families to go together. Don't send your kids. Let's go together and enjoy each other's company, and you know a lot of memories are produced that way. I still remember things that I did with my father, you know, 35 years ago, 40 years ago, and it's so important to have those memories to lean on and look back at. And you never know what day is going to make them. You know, the other day, my grandson Titus, he's 4, and we've been helping my sister-in-law get ready for a big barn sale out by Marysville. And she has this beautiful big pond. Actually, it's a small lake. It's pretty big. And Titus has been fishing with me. I keep him out of their hair by fishing. But just some of the memories made just in the last few days of him squealing as he's pulling in a fish, those are just amazing. But there's so many things we can do. And I know one thing coming up on the 8th of September is Prospect has their community yard sales. And not just in the community itself, but the roads leading into it, Hughes Road, Route 47, 203. There will be people that have signs out. And really, being the end of the year, people that don't want to put things away for the winter, you could probably get some pretty good deals and some of that stuff.
You know what I have noticed? In the last 20 years, there have been a real increase in yard sales. More people going to the Goodwill, more people going to the Salvation Army, antique stores, thrift stores. Any town you go into, you can find these places. I think there is a real nostalgia period going on now.
Yeah, I think there is. I'll be honest with you, I kind of raised my kids through all that kind of stuff because, you know, we had 4 kids, and it was just so much easier to buy a pair of blue jeans for $2.50 than it was to go out back then and spend $18 or $20, which is even more now. But yeah, I think there really is, and people are, kids aren't even afraid to do it. My granddaughter and her friends will jump in a car, and high school kids, and go to the Goodwill or Salvation Army, and it's a cool thing to do. Whereas you and I know when we grew up, it wouldn't have been all that cool.
No.
I think one of the things that increases it too, though, Scott, is that People today, and I know this through operating a clothing pantry at the Church Community Christian Fellowship, people spend so much money on clothes, and they turn them over so much faster that there are just tons of good stuff in these places that aren't worn out. When I grew up, I wore my brother's hand-me-downs and then wore them out, and then my mom would get iron-on patches, iron them in, and then sew around them, and you just kept stuff till it was gone. And now, people don't buy clothes necessarily because their clothes are worn out. They just want something different. Well, where do these clothes go? I could do a George Carlin skit real easy on that. Where do those clothes all go? You know, yeah. Be honest. You know, they go to these places, and you can go there. And I'll be honest. If I need a suit, I'm not going to a major store. I'm going to the Army and see what they have first, or Goodwill, or one of these other thrift stores.
Well, that's the thing I was thinking about, because I know a lot of people, when you start a job, you haven't gotten your first paycheck yet. So you want to look nice, and a lot of jobs still want you to be at least business casual. And if you haven't gotten your first paycheck, and maybe you've been off work for a while, you might not have the money to go out and buy new dress clothes. And this is one way you can get around that. Salvation Army, Goodwill.
Absolutely. Another way that I use them, you know, as a pastor, is when I do it, when I do a wedding. A lot of times I kind of like to know what the wedding colors are going to be, because I know that I'm not supposed to exactly look like them, but I don't want to clash either. And a lot of people don't want the darkness of a black suit or a gray suit at a wedding. So if I need something just a little, I'll go there first. You know, why not? And I know that it's certainly a lot of people still want to buy their private articles, their underclothing and whatnot at, you know, a store. But, you know, those places are even for shoes sometimes, and it just depends. You know, you just got to learn to shop. Another neat place to look is, and I'm trying to think if we have any other places in town. I know Leapin' Ministries used to have some stuff that went on there with clothing too.
There's one on Main Street, and but it's only open certain days. It's down there by where the auto store is, the car lot, right across the street.
When our kids were young, we went to Grandview, right up next to Upper Arlington, or Marble Cliff, where they all kind of come together at Fifth Avenue in Columbus. First Community Church, which was Woody Hayes Church. That's where Woody Hayes went. But anyway, First Community had every day in their basement, they had this nice thrift store. Well, the clothes that you would buy in there were unbelievably expensive clothes because of the people that lived in the area. And our kids dressed like little wealthy kids, and I never paid more than a couple dollars for anything in the store. So parents, you know, it's good if you're out there, and it is still early in the school year, you know, keep these things in mind before you go out and spend a fortune anywhere, that they are available.
And you can, clothing, my goodness, if you go buy new clothing, you can wrap up hundreds of dollars.
Oh, just absolutely.
Shoes alone now. It's a very expensive proposition, and now you have to buy the textbooks, you have to buy the school supplies, and now most sports have a tariff that's on top of if you want to play.
Oh, I know. And you know, by the way, you mentioned the school supplies. We did have our school supply giveaway at Elgin a couple weeks ago, and that went very well. I was a little surprised, honestly, to be honest with you. Tim, you helped me with that.
Yep.
I mentioned a fellow that's here in the studio with us, Tim Steele, a good friend of mine, came along today. Tim, you helped us with a giveaway, and we weren't really flooded with people, were we?
No, we weren't at all.
But that surprised me because, you know, here we were set up, and we had several churches in the Marion area that were there, and they had everything. The school list is what they went from. So they had all those school supplies there for all these grades, including backpacks and all that kind of stuff. I would think, as much as it was announced and as many people knew, that we would have just been flooded. And I know that there were a lot of people that needed stuff that probably just didn't do it. Kind of goes back to that thing is, do we plan our time, or does our time just happen?
I don't think there's a lot of planning.
Not anymore. Not like there used to be. You know, everyone needs a calendar on their wall and write down days these things happen, because just like with the school supplies, I saw a friend of mine in a service station the other day, a gas station. And he goes, man, he goes, I just gave my wife $400 to go school supply shopping. And I got counting kids. And I thought, yeah, there's five kids there. So, yep, I bet he did. But they could have come to something like that, these families. Now, some families, I do believe, feel that, you know, we'll leave that for people that really need it. We're fine. And that's a good attitude to have. It really is.
You know, there seems to be a big discussion everywhere I go right now about school starting so early. And starting before Labor Day in particular is what people seem not to like. Now, I do know that in the Ohio House, I think they are trying to pass legislation that would make it mandatory for all schools to start after Labor Day. But I was shocked. I think it was River Valley started last week.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Very early.
And you know, Scott, I didn't know that legislation was in the House. I certainly think it would be great. I cannot believe how quickly, I know that everyone says it, but it really did. I mean, they're not getting out till after the 1st of June. And, you know, everything goes so rapidly. Then you have the 4th of July weekend that sneaks up. And then all of a sudden, you hit August and you're planning to go back. And I don't know that I talked to any kids, and I have a lot of kids that I'm around involved with, that were ready to go back this year. They were just like, we haven't had any summer. We're not ready to go back. And then, of course, now they are. But what do you think is the what do you think about that yourself personally? You think that's good, bad?
Well, I think it's good because I think that the reason they're doing this is to give them time off during the school year. And I mean, there's only going to be 180 school days, no matter how you slice it. That's how many days you're in school. And they're giving them time off. And I understand that because you do get worn out, you know, day in, day out, day in, day out. But I think the problem is when you start this early, for example, like next week, which would be prior to Labor Day, and most schools are back in now, it's going to be 90 degrees next week.
Yes.
You know, when a lot of people buy school clothes, which we were just talking about, they buy winter clothes because it's getting cooler.
Winter's coming on.
Well, you can't wear that next week.
No. That's always been kind of an issue. Even September can be cold in the morning and blazing hot in the afternoon. Our old schools always had a few fans and windows open, and boy, it would get hot. But, you know, the one other thing people don't think about is the bus ride. You know, these buses all have windows which reflect the sun, and most buses are not air-conditioned. And they really, really can get hot on the bus. And some of the bus rides are relatively long. But, you know, I think the whole thing of, from my perspective, is, you know, being a pastor, one of my greatest concern is always families. And I just want to see the family have a little more time, just a little more time together, to where they can take that time and maybe do something on Labor Day weekend together where the kids aren't at home trying to get homework done from, I mean, should we be worried about homework on Labor Day weekend?
Well, that's the problem, because Labor Day is usually when people have their cookouts or outings or whatever they do, and Labor Day night is a school night because you go back on Tuesday.
Yeah, and it's just, I hate to say this, but I think we have enough school sometimes. And, you know, from my perspective, I think that parental influence is far more important than educator influence. And we've lost a lot of that in our country. Everyone used to say you're a product of your parents. I don't know that we are a product of our parents anymore because we see so little of them. You know, with both parents working today, which is pretty much necessary to keep a household, and with all the running and everything going on, we have multiplied our sports demand and our other activities demand drastically. You know, even if you're in band or whatever it is, I mean, it's like you're in training, and so you don't see each other as much. And our kids today are being raised by social media, by whatever else is out there. And I think that if we just have a little more time where parents can say, hey, let's take a little trip together, let's do this, I think it would be much, much better than what we're dealing with.
Well, and one of the big problems we have is so early now, they want you to map out your life in school. And that's kind of difficult because who knows what they want to do when they're 15? Nobody.
No one.
But by that point, they've already decided that you either need to go in college preparatory classes or you need to be headed toward a vocational school. And that's difficult because you're asking a 15-year-old to make a decision that's going to impact them the rest of their life. But there are 40-year-olds who change their mind every day.
Well, I could be a good example of that because when I was 15, I had just lost my father to an accident when I was 13. So I wasn't the most stable kid at 15, I'll be honest with you. I was ornery. I was loud. And I was not studious. And most people, they pushed me towards vocational education. I mean, they say, you need to be, I was going to be a welder. I thought, I'll just be a welder. They make great money. I had a brother-in-law that's a welder. I admired him. The truth is, I needed to be going to more of a preparatory direction. But so you're right. You know, and a few years revealed that. And I think that you're right that we need to quit pushing kids in directions all the time. We pigeonhole them so much. And even personalities, and that bothers me. One of my pet peeves is classes that they call a gifted class. My son or my daughter is in the gifted math class or the gifted English or the gift. Okay, if you want to call it a even an advanced or a whatever, you want to give it a name that is not so elitist and so separating. Because quite frankly, all these kids are gifted.
You know, interestingly enough, when I was in high school, they called it TAG. And nobody really knew what that was an acronym for. And they knew people were leaving the classroom to go to TAG. But what did that mean?
Nothing.
Yeah.
But to call them gifted? I mean, okay, all the gifted kids just left the room. All you are at rest of you are just pretty much mediocre or average. So let's go on with our next lesson. And to me, that's horrible. I have a son. I have a son that is... is he an unbelievable mechanic and thought process and understanding those things. And he went to school for that and graduated top in his class. But the point was they had to do everything with him verbally because he really had a struggle with reading comprehension. And because of that, he was tagged as not being very smart. And he's been very successful as an adult. And to this day, if kids will run into one of our other family members, well, how's he doing? And you'll tell them, they go, really? I mean, they expected him to be, I don't know, doing something far less than he is. And I think that we just get to, it is important to understand kids' direction and where their natural bend is, because we all do have a natural bend. You know, I personally believe as a follower of Jesus Christ and a Bible-believing Christian myself and following the Word of God, that God designed each and every one of us specifically for a purpose, that we have a talent that can be used and can be do wonder. You can do wonderful things within where God made you to be and how He made you to be. I believe that we are all wonderfully and specifically designed with love. So if you think about that, Scott, that doesn't elevate anyone, and it doesn't take away from anyone. It puts everyone in the same basket. They're wonderfully made. I think that we have as much value of a child that has Down syndrome is as much value in society as somebody that's going to invent the next vaccine for whatever. We just need to recognize the importance of what we all do collectively as a community.
Well, you know, I think it gives people compassion. I think when you are exposed to somebody who maybe has trouble learning in the traditional sense, or somebody who has a birth problem like Down syndrome, I think if you're exposed to them at an early enough age, you learn to have compassion and understanding, and most of all, the thing that we could all work on, patience for people, because it might take them a little longer. I know a gentleman now who's in his late 30s who has Down syndrome, And his speech is affected by that. And he doesn't get frustrated. If you can't understand him when he says something, he'll just say it until you do. And, you know, but would we have the patience if all of a sudden our speech was gobbled up, if we had a stroke and we weren't speaking as clearly as we have been used to, would we have the patience to repeat it until somebody got it? I think you'd take a while.
It's hard if you ever do get it. I used to see the frustration in my stepfather's face because he had Parkinson's, and as it got more progressed, he lost his ability to be understood. And if he noticed that you were just shaking your head like you understood and you didn't, it would really upset him. But, you know, it just, I'll give you another good example of someone, Julia, my granddaughter, was born with spina bifida. And Julia has never been able to feel anything from her waist down because of that. But I think Tim would attest to this. She lights up a room.
Yep.
She really does. She there's something about her from the day that girl was born. She's had a smile on her face. She's been personable. She will make you feel good when you feel bad. And the value of having her around is unbelievable. And the joy of having her around. I know that her parents, with all the struggles that she's had through the multiple operations, and she'll probably be having one again soon on her spine, but and all the watching other kids do things she couldn't do, even with all that, for her sake and who she is, they wouldn't change anything. I mean, and she is just such a positive person all the time. She realizes where she's at. One cool thing that she got into, though, they're doing now, is another event people can go see that's really cool if you get a chance to. It's called sled hockey, and it's becoming very popular. The Paralympics have it now. Some of the colleges are starting sled hockey teams, and it's for anyone that does not have the ability to function on two legs. And they even have some of the people on the Olympic teams now are soldiers that have lost their legs or one leg or both in battle. And these guys are great. They sit on a sled. You've got two hockey sticks, and they've got a teeth on the bottom of it that you use your arms to propel yourself across the ice. And it's just amazing to watch some of them. They fly. But she's doing that now, and I've been doing it a couple years. Gives her a great identity, and she loves it.
You know, one thing that I think, I think I may have had this conversation with somebody about a week ago, but the measure of success that we are all measured by now is money. Now, here's the problem. It's okay to make money. It's okay if you make lots of money doing what you like doing. But I knew a lady, and I'll never forget it. I met her when she was in her probably mid-60s, and she was a secretary. Mm-hmm. And she had done that all her life, and that's what paid the bills, and that was her job. But she always, since she was in high school, loved theater. So anytime the community did a community theater project, she did it. Now, never received a paycheck in her life from the theater. Never did. But if you would have asked her in her 60s what her profession was, she would have said actress. The job that paid nothing.
Yeah.
And I think people have to stop being ashamed of that. It's not what draws the biggest crowd. It's not what makes the most money. It's what gives you the greatest satisfaction. You got to be happy with yourself.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. It is, you're really right. We have become so money-centric in this country that we recognize people. I'll give you a good example. Les Wexner,
mm-hmm.
Is held up as a icon. But the truth is, do you and I know him personally? Now, I don't know him either. He might be the greatest guy in the world, but he might not be. But people don't think about that. They just say, wow, look, he's got the limited, he's got this, he's got that, he's a philanthropist for this and that. Les Wexner has an unbelievable ability to understand how to make money and to keep on making it. Okay? You may have the ability, like your friend, to be in a community theater and touch people's lives your whole life. Which one's more important? I'm not going to say. I'm just saying they're different things. Some people are able to know how to make money. Most people that know how to make money, I've watched this over the years, and anytime they approach something, they approach with this attitude. What's the worst thing that can happen? I mean, if I can't make money in this, I'm not getting involved. And then there's a great element of people that will get involved in some and say, I don't know if I'm going to make any money, but I really want to do this. So is either one wrong? No, they're different. And
it's a very deep discussion to have.
It is.
Because truthfully, the idea of paychecks. I mean, I have heard people say, well, where's my paycheck? Well, if you're doing it for that reason, that's when I call it a job. And there's nothing wrong with having a job. And you know what? If you can make money doing what you love, good. That's nothing wrong with that at all. But if you're doing something in the hopes of a big paycheck, then you probably are not, you probably really don't like what you're doing. If you would go to work if they weren't paying you, that's a love. That's not a job. If the paycheck stopped tomorrow and you stop going, that's a job. And I put a Facebook post up, which I don't normally do, a couple weeks ago, where I said, we have to treat people who are creative differently. Because some have tremendous intelligence. I think of the Albert Einsteins, and you look at how he dressed and how his hair was. He didn't have time to be bothered with that stuff because he was thinking. And people in the theater and people who want to get out in front of people and people in the broadcast industry to a certain extent, they, it's creativity. It's different than going to Whirlpool and making dryers.
Absolutely.
And that's fine to go make dryers. We all need dryers, and if you like doing it, good. But there are creative minds in this world who could not do that.
They lose their mind.
They would lose it. You're right.
You know, it's interesting. In what I do, being a pastor, I truly believe is a calling. I believe God puts that calling on your life, and we have to guard it from being a job. And a few years ago, I had a group of pastors that were at the church for a meeting, and they were talking about some of the support they were losing from different areas. And where's this going to go? How are we going to do this? How are we going to... And I just kind of stopped the conversation. I asked this question. I said, fellas, I said, if tomorrow your support stopped, it was gone, would you be in the pulpit the next Sunday? And you better really think about that real hard, because you better be. And if you wouldn't be, you need to get out of it now, because this isn't why you're in it. And I know that, you know, even... And whether they intentionally do it, I don't know. When I started in the ministry early on, there was no money. Our church started 12 years ago, and it was just a few people around a table that wanted to get a church started, and they didn't have any money. And I think that eventually, within 6 months or so, they had agreed to give me $200 a month, and I had to continue to work a secular job. And as the church grew, that grew. Well, it finally got to the point where it's been for the last few years that most people would consider a very small salary. But what's interesting about that is when I see other pastors, sometimes they look down on you because you don't make the amount of money. You're not quite as professional as they are. I told a pastor a few weeks ago, he was talking about his professionalism. I said, I'm not a professional. I'm a shepherd. I'm a shepherd. You know, we are called as pastors to be that design of the biblical shepherd, to take care of his flock. And I told him, I saw very, very few shepherds of old or of today or described in the Bible that ever wore a suit and tie and worried a lot about Abercrombie and Fitch. You know what I mean? They took care of their flock. And it was never about the money, it was about the flock. So I think that we have to, you know, it's interesting this conversation this morning, because I think the direction that we're both going and have been going this entire conversation, we need to get back to a little bit of reality and simplicity.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I've always wondered this about pastors, priests, reverends, however they want to refer to themselves. Now, one thing I've noticed, when I was very young, I went to a church. I was invited by some friends, and I went. And the preacher got up, and he said, you know, we're not going to be out of here by 11:30. This is starting at 10:30 on a Sunday morning. We're not going to be out of here by 11:30 like all the other churches. You know they're out to lunch. I preach till I'm done preaching. And he did have some long sermons, and good for him. That's what he wanted to do. But he was, his connotation about other preachers having a time frame was negative. Now, I always wondered, and I've never seen it done, if a preacher got up, because I think the idea is that the preacher is getting paid. I think there's some thought in that to the congregation. I always wonder if a preacher got up just one Sunday and said five words and walked away. What would they do?
Well, it would depend on the church.
Yeah.
Some churches would go nuts. Some churches would ask for his head. And other churches would say, well, that was different. Within our church, and I can only speak for our congregation, from day one, and starting with a fresh group of people, you don't bring a lot of old tradition in. And our church is definitely a melting pot. We have people that have come from every denomination and background you can imagine, and we welcome that they did. But they come together as believers in Jesus Christ. But here's the deal. From the very beginning, I've loved to throw curveballs because I don't want anybody getting stuck in a rut. And being a shepherd or a pastor is not about that time spent in the pulpit. It's what you do all week long and every day. So if I were to do that, people would just, I don't know what they think. They think, well, maybe pastor needed a break today, or maybe he just wanted to concentrate on those five words. But would people get angry? Do you think they would, Tim?
I don't know. My brother's a pastor, and he did it at his church. He had, you know, his sermon was like 3 minutes one Sunday. And he said, that's all I got for you today.
What did they do?
Nothing. They thought it was great.
Yeah.
I think it just depends. But if you would get into a more liturgical church that, you know, what they call high church with a lot of,
Church.
Those people would not appreciate that because they could probably time their watches by a sermon. Now, with myself, I just pray and ask the Lord to let me deliver what I've read and studied and do it right. And we usually run about whatever. You know, by the time the sermon starts, we start at 10:30. By the time the sermon actually starts, it's probably 10 after 11 because of all the opening exercises and whatnot. And I usually if I glance up at the clock and I'm about done, I'm hitting somewhere in the 11:30, 11:35 time. So it's like a half hour. People today don't hold the attention they used to. And believe it or not, folks, you know, these churches are comfortable. The old churches were a slab in a lot of them that you sat on, and they did go 2 and 3 hours. I don't know how they did it.
You know, it's interesting when I think about the profession of radio, being on radio right now. When I started at a station that had an AM and an FM station. And all through my, because this is, you know, before YouTube, before iPads and all those sort of things, if you wanted to hear a new song, if you didn't want to go buy the CD, you listened to the radio.
Right.
So FM radio was always more popular than AM radio. Not so much the case anymore, but it used to be. And I had never even listened to AM radio. Teenager listening to talk shows. Back then, there weren't a whole lot of them to begin with. But I never had heard AM radio. And when I got in radio, they put me on the AM side because I initially was a writer. That's what I was writing the news reports. And when I went on the air on AM radio, I always knew that we were drawing a smaller audience than what they were on the FM side. But I always thought, if I'm interviewing somebody on, let's say, suicide, if I'm interviewing them, if you pulled that out 20 years from now, that still could have some significance.
Absolutely.
Would a DJ who pops in every 2 minutes and tells you what the next song's going to be, even though it's listened to more, is it going to have any significance years from now?
Not really, but I think that people have a tendency to do what's easy, not what's smart.
Yeah, but that's true.
And listening's easy.
Yeah.
And music makes me feel good. I turn it on and feel good. Now, it's kind of interesting. You mentioned AM. One of the first stations I remember was WCOL. And that was a AM pop station when I was growing up. But everything was AM. It's funny you mentioned, when I was in high school, I couldn't afford to go out and buy, at the time, it probably would have been initially 8 tracks and then reel-to-reel. Or not reel-to-reel, but cassettes. And I had one of these little AM-FM portable radios, about 8 inches long, 6 inches high, and I had these massive Bose speakers hooked into the back of it. And that was my listening, but I would just turn stations and listen. You think, though, Terry, I'm Terry. I'm used to Terry.
I know. Terry will be here Tuesday.
Terry will be here Tuesday. You think it's got that... maybe we need to listen to a little bit more AM every now and then, hear what's going on out there.
You know, I've always said this. If you are hearing something that you agree with, change the channel.
Wow. Do you?
Yes, yes. Because if you agree with it, it's an old saying, preaching to the choir.
Yes, exactly.
I know what you're saying. I already agree with it. I need to hear the other side. And people don't do that. Now the tendency is shut down the other side. We don't want anybody to hear that.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't that really limit us?
Oh, that's...
It would turn us into a bunch of drones, you know? We do need to hear the other side. Now, even though sometimes what the other side may make you angry, but it also may probe thought. And, you know, our country, this is a brilliant country that was designed. And it's designed for discourse. And for dissenting views to come together and come together for what's best at the time. You've got to have two different views or three or four for that to even happen. I know that I welcome proper criticism. I'll give you an example. If Tim's a dear friend of mine that's here today, and if Tim were to pull me aside, we've gone to church together in a couple different churches, we've known each other for years. If Tim were to say, hey, Steve, I need to talk to you a minute. You know, I don't quite agree with what you've been saying about this or this direction you're going. I'm going to listen, and I'm going to think about it, and I'm going to think, you know what? Maybe Tim was right. Maybe Tim's right. Now, some people that would come and criticize, I know that's all they do is criticize. I'm not going to even, you know, the attitude's going to be different. And I think that we have to do that with what we're listening to also. Listen to someone that's talking common sense, whether or not you agree with it or not. But, you know, the hate bashing on both sides that we hear on the radio today knows no one any good. You wonder why our kids argue all the time? Well, kids argue anyway. But the reason it's getting worse and people don't get along, I mean, look at what they're hearing and seeing all the time. Listen to what Republicans are saying about Democrats. This is what Democrats are saying about Republicans. These are not kind words these kids are hearing. You know, when you come home and your kids are listening to, I always listened to mom and dad when I was a kid, you know, I hid around the corner. And when they say, when you hear, oh, they're just a bunch of stupid idiots, I don't know why they get it. Is this something our kids need to hear or understand? You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting because there are two sayings that I have always thought were very interesting. The first one is, if you're the smartest person in your group, get a new group, because you're not learning anything. And the other one that I really...
How many people writing these down?
Little things. This is the one I live by. And boy, the truism of it is so true. I never learned anything when I was talking. When you think about that, how could you? I'm telling you what I know. That's what I'm doing right now. But I am not learning anything.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because as a pastor, in general, I would agree with you. As a pastor, from my perspective, I do learn when I'm talking sometimes, because when I'm teaching and preaching out of the Word of God, all of a sudden, you know, Eureka light will go off on something I'm teaching, and I'm like, wow. You know, so I do actually learn. However, most of the time you don't.
You don't. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make a comment on today's show, how much I really enjoyed it. First of all, on the topic of patience with gifted children, not necessarily the type of patience, the type of gifted children that educators look at, but children who are challenged, but how the parents will grow in patience if they're just praying and being led by God. The child understands unconditional love probably much more so than what you would call a normal child. The second point was the responsibilities of a pastor. Many congregations have no idea of the 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning phone calls to rush to the hospital to minister to somebody who's ill, or to a nursing home, or from somebody who's just needs to talk to somebody in that early in the morning for whatever reason. And congregations are pretty much insensitive to the amount of time and work and prayer a pastor actually goes through. Anyhow, I enjoyed the show. I did have to drive up to Prospect to get a good signal that wasn't being bled over from another area down by Delaware. But I have enjoyed it. I just want to thank you for airing it.
Hey, thank you for calling in. I certainly appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, there we go. That's pretty good.
I certainly hope that... how much time do we have?
We've got about a minute. Can you believe that?
Oh, I can't believe
it. Blew right by.
You know, I've enjoyed this. And I do want to say that over the next few weeks, I do want to make sure that I have more events going on. I'll be contacting myself. I'll be contacting some churches and other groups in the area. So I have more of that information that we'll give you. And I've enjoyed this.
And we know they're out there listening.
Yes.
A guy pulled over because our signal was... In Delaware, it does bleed to that gospel station, but it's not a bad station.
No, it's not a bad... But it does bleed, and
it does bleed.
It depends on the weather. Cloudy days I love because the signal goes almost all the way to Delaware.
That's why winter is good in radio, because the signal will go further in the winter. It's all about that ionosphere up there. When the ionosphere is warmer, it's a little murky.
Right. Well, Scott, it's been great being on here with you. Tim, I'm glad you sat and listened all this time. Tim was with us today and had a couple comments to make.
Absolutely. And we'll be back next Friday morning. And you can hear this on Sunday morning at 9:10 and next Tuesday at 6:10. Perfect.
Take care, everyone.
Have a good weekend.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. The legendary star of the Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.